Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's program is sponsored by Hemp Pliance in Austin, Texas. On today's program, we'll hear from Nathan Murphy of Hemp Pliance, find out what it's all about and how it can benefit you and the hemp industry. So let's get things started with Nathan. So let's get things started with Nathan Murphy of Hemp Pliance. Nathan, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. And how is the weather and everything down in Texas down your way?
Well, it's not the February freeze we just got over, but, it's looking a lot nicer. It's spring weather, getting a little warmer, so getting right about planting season.
That's right. You guys did have some heavy cold weather and a lot of snow and everything here in the last couple weeks, didn't you?
Yeah, so at one point, I know some people had it a lot worse than I did, but even in my house, we lost power for 3 days, and then we subsequently lost water for the next 3 days. So we had a week there that it was pretty tough, but I know some other people had it a lot worse. So
yeah, in Indiana,
grateful.
Yeah, in Indiana, the worst we had was maybe 5 or 6 inches there a couple weeks ago, and that was the brunt of our winter. So I don't know, a lot of people moved south to get away from it, but watching the Weather Channel last week, I was like, wow, that's got to be crazy for those folks that aren't used to it down there. How does that affect, let's say, the farming community? And is it a late start now for everybody, or is this just part of the typical spring in Texas?
Well, nothing about that February freeze was typical, but anybody that had some internal plants and lost power, there was definitely some damage. So we're still trying to take a full assessment of that, and Hemp Pliance is here to help track data. So we're trying to help the farmers we have and to add some more farmers that may need some help with data tracking and proof of growth. So that's one of those aspects where, every crisis has two sides, a danger and an opportunity. So there's looking to try and help people any way we can and see how we can better prepare for the future.
Well, Nathan, let's dig into that a little further. Now, with data compliance, that sort of thing, what is it that Hemp Pliance does? And as you told me before we went on the air, that's basically the word is a hybrid from hemp and compliance. So it's called Hemp Pliance. And first of all, how can people find you on the internet and get in touch with you? And what is it that you guys do? What service is it that you offer?
So Hemp Pliance started as a compliance app because, we're based out of Texas and there's a little bit more concern. We want to avoid the farmer to felon program. So what we're looking to do is
did you say farmer to felon?
Well, it's with drivers driving hemp across state lines in Idaho, for example, or sometimes even Texas, if they get stopped and, the law officer thinks it sounds, smells, looks, and feels like marijuana, they can, take corrective action on that. And we just want to avoid that situation for farmers, for drivers, for anybody involved in the industry. So we really established a software system that's based on mobile app technology that connects into a database. We're protected on an Azure cloud database, so where everything can be put into blockchain. So we've really created a secure system for data collection and management throughout the entire hemp supply chain.
Oh, wow. So if this is something that I need, first of all, how do I know I need it? And what is it going to do for me?
Well, if you're not keeping track of your records, I'll tell you that you already need it. The USDA has requirements for every farmer to keep track of where they planted a seed, who they got that seed from, what the results of that were. And we take all of that information throughout the growth cycle, starting with the farmer, but we also have a mobile app for transporters and samplers and for labs as well. We're working on lab integrations to digitize the COAs so that there's, you can avoid any thoughts of impropriety or unfortunately there is some fraud in the industry. And so we're just providing an extra layer of protection for people who want to do it the right way.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit, Nathan. Right now, you're in Austin, Texas. You're offering this service to the hemp community. Let's back up. What got you involved in hemp? When did you get involved in the hemp industry? Was it first a personal voyage and then turned into business, or how did this happen? Where were you? And I know that again, we discussed the fact you traveled all over the country looking for a home base. So let's start from the beginning. How did you get started, and how did you end up in Austin?
Well, I'll give a couple of highlight points. So I was born in Austin, but then my dad was in the Air Force. We moved around a little bit, and I ended up in Indiana when I was in K through 12. When I was in 11th grade, I wrote a paper saying it was a persuasive paper on why hemp should be legal and why it would be the next cash crop. Mm-hmm. I was, I think, 16 at the time, and everybody kind of looked at me silly, and I was like, it's coming, man. You know, cannabinoid markets, marijuana, you know, that's all well and good. You know, people who are going to do it are going to do it. But that market is pretty saturated, whether it's black market or gray market, as we see in a lot of states in the U.S. today.
And how long ago was this? About what time was this?
Well, that was about 16 years ago. I'm 32 now.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
That was back in 2005, 2006.
Oh wow! So you had your finger on the pulse of hemp way back before. I mean, again, a decade before it was even legalized or even looked at by the local by politicians in the United States.
Oh yeah, and you know there have been select few people that have pushed it over the years. I went to Purdue University, studied in Craner University as a management economics major. And so for me, I like to look at like the macro picture of things and just understanding, you know, what are the ramifications and what are really the incentives. And when you look at how hemp became illegal over the years, just the incentives for it, you know, there's a lot of racist undertones. There's a lot of misunderstanding. And then there's a lot of incentive for competitive markets to do what they can to discriminate or disparage it to avoid some competition. So, you know, there's a lot of aspects that go into that, and that goes into the history of cannabis in general. But like I said, cannabinoids, marijuana, that's all well and good. But I still feel to this day that, you know, where the industry can really take to the next level is through hemp and grain and the various markets that can go into. I really think it's something that our country needs to get back to manufacturing and, you know, spur the entrepreneurial spirit in our country again. And that's one of those things that I've just been passionate about for a long time.
Well, let's go back to high school. And again, you know, 10 years before the farm bill, the 2014 farm bill was passed, again, you were looking at hemp. It would be understandable for most kids at that age to be looking at the marijuana industry and that sort of thing. But you were looking at the hemp side of things. So from that point, take us from there to 2014. Did you kind of put that on the back burner? Was it something you were watching? Again, you went to Purdue University, you were studying these things, but hemp was not on the radar for most people. So during that period of time, how did you get to 2014, and then where did you go from there?
So during that time, I was finishing up school. I did some political activism just with a nonpartisan organization and just asking people questions and really coming into who I was as a man and as an individual, and just how do I want to approach, you know, my marketplace. And after I graduated school in 2012, I traveled around for a little bit, stayed with family, and lived in Colorado for a few months back in 2012. I really liked it, you know, kind of put it on my radar. Then I moved around and I went into a grad program called the Global Entrepreneurship Program, or GEP for short. And so this is a global program where we spent, this was 44 people from 17 countries that spent 4 months in France, 4 months in China, and 4 months in Indiana at Purdue. So with three different universities, EM Lyon, Zhejiang University, and Purdue University. And we really just traveled the world, did some business aspects. We had different modules where we worked on different business projects in each country and learned how to do business in the different parts of the world, because I'll tell you, they're all very distinctly different. But then we also made a close-knit family between friends. So throughout that time, it was just exploring entrepreneurship and what does it mean to be an entrepreneur and how do you go from zero to having a business? And, you know, they can teach you a lot of things in the books, but until you do it, you don't really understand it. So after that program, one of my classmates and I, he had an idea we called the Hop Project, where he could recycle the, he told me he could recycle the alpha acid from used trube. So we went into Colorado and tried to get into the plant extraction business for hops, which, as you may or may not know, is a cousin plant to cannabis sativa. So with that, we were successful. We started a, his family was able to fund us and get us some startup capital. And what we did is, you know, we just explored and did some R&D, and we came up with an extraction process using ethanol to actually achieve his goal. And from there, we started trying to make it into a process. I was using it and doing some consumer testing, and I was learning how to brew. Shout out to the brewers in Summit County, Colorado, AJ and Corey, a couple of great guys, great brewers. If you're ever in Silverthorne, Colorado, check them out. And if you, so we did a market analysis. Like I said, I'm an economist, so I went out and I said, okay, how do we actually get this into the market? And I went to beer stores and others, and we just realized that the margins weren't there. And so we said,
was it an oversaturated market?
Well, it was just the cost of production equaled the cost of margins. And so in order for us to be successful, we would have had to have scaled up extensively, like to Coors level. And so we just didn't quite have the runway for that. So we made a pivot. We had got a CO2 machine during our test, and we said, let's try and use hemp and see what we can do. And, you know, the marijuana market, this is 2015 that we started, and I was with them up through 2017. And during that time, it was, you know, it was a very gray market in Colorado. Everything was sort of, nobody was really sure. Everybody was sort of muddling through. There was a simultaneous marijuana recreational program and a medical program plus the hemp program. And matching those three different industries, you know, not everything fit together. So we had to navigate through a lot of those, you know, the red tape and figure out what we could do and where we could do it. And, you know, that was my first real deep dive into what does hemp legislation look like, and how do rules and regulations get developed. And, you know, not everything works perfectly, but, you know, we started to find a way. And That was really my first foray. Is we said, let's take the CBD products, put it in some tinctures. We had some vape at the time and some creams and salves, and we went and introduced them to the different places that we were allowed to in the marketplace.
So this was around 2014, 2015.
So we started in I graduated in 2015 in the summer, and then we went to Colorado in the fall of 2015, and that's when we were really getting started. So
okay, go ahead.
I officially left that in January of 2018, but that was like the journey that we went through at the time.
Kind of your boot camp for hemp.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this again, go ahead.
It did provide a great opportunity to network and meet a lot of great people here and there, and you know, I was fortunate to be able to learn quite a bit about the industry and some of the challenges that are faced.
Now, that was, again, 2014, 2015, the 2014 Farm Bill, which legalized hemp, or at least put it on the radar, had hit. Now, at the same time in Colorado, they were dealing with marijuana. Was hemp kind of on the back burner there? Did many people give it much credence at the time, or was the focus mainly on marijuana? Or you know, again, you were looking at hemp. Were there a lot of folks out there like you, or again, was it mostly focused on the other side?
I'd say it was probably the money was definitely focused on the marijuana. I'll tell you that much. And from our perspective, it was a little less of a barrier to entry to enter hemp. Because with marijuana, they had prohibitively high cost on being able to enter the market at all. The licensing fees were just prohibitive for us to be able to get into that industry. And so we started looking at hemp and said, well, it's a little easier for us to get into just because the licensing was prohibitive at the time. So we decided to jump in, and I think we were amongst a number of other people who were starting to realize something similar. And as we were going through the process, one of the funny things at the time, and I think this has since been corrected, but We were allowed to sell to medical marijuana dispensaries, but not recreational marijuana dispensaries. Hmm. So that was like one of those little tricks that you had to figure out. And as we were going through the process, we were also allowed to sell to anybody else that wasn't a recreational facility.
Was anybody able to sell to the recreational marijuana side, or just you guys were not allowed to? Maybe you didn't have the permits, or was there a wall there?
Only marijuana products. So it was hemp products, hemp-derived products could be medical, but they couldn't be recreational.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. I'm with you now.
Mm-hmm. It was a fundamental split. And so only marijuana products were allowed to be sold. And I know at one point they're like, there was an accessories issue because glass doesn't have marijuana in it. So it was one of those things where, you know, everybody was toeing the line, and I didn't get too close into that industry. I did have a friend who was a grower that I lived with, but it was one of those things that, you know, you just kind of figure out what you're allowed to do and you go forward from there.
Right. Now, what about on the political side of things? Because, again, Colorado is kind of a unique state, a little more progressive than, say, Indiana. So at the time, again, you had marijuana on one side, you had hemp on the other. Were the legislatures, the lawmakers, were they as pro-hemp as they were pro-marijuana? They were getting a lot of tax money and a lot of national attention with marijuana, but were they focusing on hemp, or was that kind of a like the stepchild, or how did they look at that on a political stance there in Colorado?
You know, I wasn't as close into some of the legislators on that one, but for me, it felt like they were certainly doing what they could to help provide some context. And so I know I went to a number of meetings where the CDA had a conversation with the public on what type of testing was done and what the difference between GC and HPLC were, gas chromatography and high pressure liquid chromatography, I believe is the acronym for that. And the difference between the two, as I can say now after some more study, is that one decarboxylates the product, the GC, and then the other one gives you a full spectrum of the acidic compounds. So for example, if you have THCA and THC in your product, in the GC, it would all just be one form. But if you have the HPLC, then you're going to be looking at, you have to take the acidic compound times 0.877 plus the regular compound. So THC plus THCA times 0.877 is how you get the total potential cannabinoids. I'll put quotes around that one. And then the GC just gives you the total potential as its only output. So that's really the difference. And that's, there's a couple of different processes, and that gets down, like, that's a whole deep dive. That's another conversation. But those are some of the things that they helped to identify for us when we were, you know, as a processor, we had to go do some testing, and you have to test not only the individual extracts, the flower before you do it, each of the products that you come up with per batch, and just make sure that you're testing it regularly over time so you don't have any degradation. So just, you know, with making quality products, there's a lot that goes into that. And it's one of those things where you have to do it right. And, you know, over time, we came in with the health department and started to understand, you know, what is it that we need to do to hit good manufacturing practices? And then there's other labs out there that are trying to do ISO 9001 and other processes that sort of prove that you're doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of that takes time and money. And it's one of those things that, you know, when you're just starting out, you got to learn along the way. But, you know, as we move forward, you know, I think that's become more standard practice in the industry. And as it concerns legislation, I think my hope for the industry is that we as participants in the industry can help to set the standards so that we don't have to rely on the government to set them for us.
Well, there
I
we
think
go.
That's how we can, if we hold ourselves to a higher standard than the government's minimum baseline, then we got nothing to worry about. And I think that's where we're people doing it the right way are trying to be. And, you know, I've applauded a number of people that I've seen along the way doing just that.
Well, Nathan, a fascinating story, and we're not done yet. We still have a journey to go through here. When you were in Colorado, you said around 2018, you decided to move on. Tell us how you ended up from 2018 to 2021 that you ended up in Austin, Texas. And why did you end up in Austin, Texas?
So, like I said, I was born in Austin, Texas, but during 2018, I was, you know, it wasn't necessarily a pleasant split from those previous partners. And okay. It was one of those things where I just needed to kind of do something else. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I ended up working with a friend of mine in a geotech engineering company. So I was a field technician. I'm actually currently ACI certified, which is American Concrete Institute.
Okay.
And so I was really the regional field inspector for the mountains in Colorado. So I worked everywhere from Granby down to Breckenridge. And, you know, there was a major CDOT project. There was building a bridge up in Summit County. And, you know, I would be the quality control tester for when the workers, shout out to the construction workers who do all the work. But I would come in and test and say, you know, this section is good. This section clears. Just making sure that those past inspections and, you know, with construction, there's a lot of requirements, especially if they're load bearing, mm-hmm. You know, if they're main highways. So you got to make sure that everything passes a certain density test and that it actually is going to be a stable road over time.
So, and we trust that the folks in those positions know what they're doing. So,
yeah, well, there's a lot of regulations that go into that, and meeting those standards was an eye opener for me on just how stringent they can be. And, mm-hmm. you know, quality control is one of those things that if you do it right the first time, you don't got to go do it again the next time.
So, very true. Very true. It's better to do it right. Right. Absolutely. So from there, you obviously either grew tired of that or decided to move on as well.
Yeah. So it was about 2 years in and I said, you know, I haven't left the country in a while. I got that travel bug. I think I'm going to go ahead and leave the country. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend at the time, now wife, Heather Heiss, she was talking about leaving the country too. So I said, why don't we go see some of my friends from my grad days? And so I went to China and spent about 6 months both traveling in China and then did a little bit of a side swing over to Sri Lanka and Nepal and then did a little side work in China just to really, I spent about 6 months over there. And we came back in September of 2019, right about the same position we were at when we left. And so we said, well, let's travel the U.S. and see where we want to land. We were considering pretty much five states. I said, well, we could consider Madison. We could consider Portland. We could consider my dad's over in North Carolina, so we considered North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then Fort Collins was our fallback plan. Before we started the journey, Heather said, anywhere but Texas. And I said, anywhere but California.
And she lost.
Went to Texas. Through California, and we traveled up the north and then did 8,000 miles, looped back around to the East Coast, and we landed in Texas. So her mom actually worked at Whole Foods, still does, and so we stopped here and met her mom and really got to explore Austin a little bit. And, you know, it's a beautiful city. There's a lot of lakes around, natural springs quite a bit, and you know, this is pre-pandemic, so it was, you know, quite an energetic city, and mm-hmm. You know, we were impressed by that. On the way out of Austin, my car died, my alternator went out, so I had to buy a new car while I was in Dallas at a friend's house, and then we're like, you know, let's just stay in Texas. Let's go ahead and, you know, try and find some work in Austin and see what we can do. This is early 2019, so we found an apartment in February. We got jobs in that February, which I'll come back to how I found HempLions. And then the pandemic hit in March, and we've kind of been under quarantine since then. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's been a year now. I think everybody's kind of got a good grip. We got to recognize that it's definitely been a tough year on everyone. So it's been a journey, but, you know, I think we're in a pretty good place, and I appreciate you know, I have a man of faith, so I, you know, I put my praise in God for giving me the opportunity to land on my feet and to find an opportunity that I think is worth pursuing.
Well, and it's hard to believe, but actually it was literally 1 year ago today that the WHO declared the pandemic. So it seems like it's been forever, but it's like all of a sudden we're a year later, and it's just kind of hard to believe. We just kind of, it's almost like I feel like we slept through a year or something. I'm not sure. Although a lot of people did accomplish a lot of things that we discuss on this program. Sometimes you can look at positive things that came out of COVID. Of course, a lot of negative things, but business-wise, it did make a lot of people reevaluate their lives and their businesses and things like that. Some people coming out stronger, some people, of course, a lot of suffering, but just a strange year. So you found yourself in Austin pre-pandemic. Obviously, I think most people realize Austin can be a great party town, very active town politically, entertainment-wise, that sort of thing. So now we're looking, we see the light. We're hoping that we're seeing the light, that we're going to get out of this. Where is that going to take you? What do you anticipate, and how do you see the hemp market and the industry, specifically in Texas, but nationwide as well? Where do you see that going here in 2021?
Well, for 2021, I'll take a step back first. So pre-pandemic, when we were in Austin, my choice was, you know, find some work. And so I went to the Texas Hemp Convention up in Plano and Dallas area, and that's where I actually met Ken Benbow and Will Wally from Hempliance, and I followed up with them over the next couple of weeks. And that's, you know, just through being persistent is how I landed the job there. And, and you know, I recognize the hemp industry, and, you know, we were a young company just really coming to market, and just really helping them understand what are the needs in the hemp industry and matching that and adapting and understanding the software that they've built for that. So for me, we've spent the pandemic and the COVID period as a chance to develop and to really buckle down on what we've built. Mm-hmm. And we've added a couple of different services, including Hemp Road, H-E-M-P-R-O-A-D. It's an app on Android and iOS, which is for tracking and tracing hemp transportations for samplers and transporters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we've also added our dashboard, which we had started as just being a growth cycle tracking app for farmers, with Hempliance is the name of the company, is the name of the app. That's our farmer app. And then we've added a dashboard so that the data collected on the mobile app can be viewed through a computer dashboard by a farmer and then shared with his consultants or whomever they'd like to reach out to. Mm-hmm. And so during that period, we've also been building a relationship with Dr. Runa at Prairie View A&M University and working to help enhance his genetic research program. You know, it's one of those things with hemp. As a company, we've found over 800 different varieties of hemp that are for sale either in Texas or elsewhere. And Texas has, you know, a restricted list. It's restricted to 360 approved seeds, maybe 364 now. And from that, we've just been saying, well, what are these genetics, and who is it that's selling them? And some of the genetics are proprietary and only restricted by a single seller. And some genetics or the names are, you know, they're different users, different sellers, but they're the same variety. And some genetics are the same variety with different names. And so we don't really know, to be honest. Like, the base science hasn't really been fully done. And I know there's a number of groups, shout out to the Midwest Hemp Database. I know there's a number of universities working together to identify seed strains in the Midwest. And so I applaud their efforts and really appreciate what they're doing. From that point, we've looked at 2021 as really the first grow season in Texas. And so we've been working on building up our hemp pilot program. We've got some farmers up and down the state, as far south as Harlingen, and working our way up the state to each of the different microclimates. I think 7 have been identified in Texas. And just to understand what will grow here, and how will it perform in whether that's indoor, outdoor, CBD, grain, fiber. So that's really one of our primary goals, is to help the researchers to understand sort of the lay of the land, so that we can help the industry to have, you know, better knowledge. We want to increase the knowledge base on, you know, what are we actually dealing with? Because, you know, hemp is still a very new product, even though the Farm Bill came out in 2014, you know, Colorado, Oregon, they've got a great head start in breeding programs and building up what works for them. And so I think that's got to be adapted to every state and to every region. And so we're just here to help with that as well, to try and do some research and collect some data so that it can be analyzed. So that's 2021 we're looking forward to as an opportunity to really grow the industry knowledge base and to get some more users. We've just opened up in December as launching the dashboard. So they can find information about us on hemplianceinc.com, or they can feel free to reach out to me. My email is nathan@hempliance.app.
And again, Hempliance, that just to make sure we spell that, that is HEMPLIANCE, Hempliance. And you said that was hempliance.com?
It's hempliance.inc.com. Oh, okay. And then my email is hempliance.app. So
hempliance.app.
APP?
There we go. Once again, Nathan Murphy. Nathan is with Hemp Appliance out of Austin, Texas. Nathan, it's been a fascinating conversation. You've certainly, you know, people would love to have had your nomadic life, to be able to not only travel around the United States 8,000 miles, but to go to China and be able to just roam around there. That's got to be some fascinating, some stories. We certainly want to get you back on the program here eventually and talk about more of that as it relates to hemp and dig in a little deeper on some of these topics. But again, you've given us some great information today, and we certainly do appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your time and for sharing with me. And for anyone out there that's looking to get into hemp, I would recommend you be cautious. You know, only put in what you know you can lose. If you're going to be growing, for sure, you got to make sure you know what you're growing it for, because there's a lot of different end uses, and we're still developing, but, you know, we are developing as an industry. So I have a lot of high hopes for a lot of people that are doing it the right way. And, you know, I think we can move forward as an industry, and I look forward to the places that we will go.
All right. Fantastic. Nathan, once again, we appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great day.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks so much to Nathan for participating. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.